Has no patience, look at his face and in his eyes. He's been waiting, he's been way bound to the die. Always taking chances, all those conversations. Don't know if he'll make it, don't know why he even tries.
Welcome to the first ever Raising the Nuts podcast. I'm Jody.
And I'm Trevor.
And this podcast will focus on a variety of topics with an emphasis on mental health.
We'll also talk about parenting, nutrition, health, poker, and raising kids in an unconventional lifestyle.
But before we get into that, we are not doctors. This content should not be used in substitution of professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always get advice from physicians for medical conditions, and any advice we give should be tried at your own risk. And always, always, always ask a doctor before starting something new. So here we are, our first ever podcast.
First one. What are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about who we are.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about our experiences in life.
Yeah, life experiences, yeah.
That have led us to be so passionate about mental health.
Mm-hmm. And probably, hopefully we'll get into two big things that happened in our life that led us kind of towards this journey of really working on mental health and helping other people with mental health. Start off with who we are. Who are you, Jody?
I am Jody.
You're Jody.
I'm 36, just turned 36
mm-hmm.
last week. I'm married to Trevor.
That's me.
We've been married for 10 years.
Right.
Together for 12. Three kids.
Okay.
Ava, Cameron, Andrew. They're famous kids.
They are somewhat famous on the YouTube streets. Poker famous, yeah.
I am passionate about holistic nutrition. It is my favorite thing in the world.
Okay.
So I am an integrative nutrition health coach. I'm certified, and I do nutrition consulting for people. And most of my nutrition deals with mental health, getting your brain right so you can think straight and feel your best.
And I am Trevor, if you didn't get that already. I'm a professional poker player for 15 years now, and I'm Jody's number one client. So Jody has helped me lose a lot of weight, get myself into peak mental shape to play poker for a living. And I'm also very passionate about mental health due to an event that happened in my life several years ago, which we'll get into eventually. So yeah, that's a little bit about us. We live in New Jersey. And born and raised. I also have a YouTube channel called Raising the Nuts, which is the name of this podcast also. The YouTube channel started less than a year ago, and we include the kids in there a lot. And it's basically the visual representation of what it's like to raise kids in an unconventional lifestyle. And that's what we're going to talk about a lot on this podcast as well. So I guess let's get into the reasons that we've gotten into mental health. And why we're passionate about mental health. So I guess we're going to start off with a story about Cameron, who is our middle child, our wild child, our unique child. She will be turning 9 in 2 weeks. She's probably the star of the YouTube channel, I would say.
Yes, she does commentary.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about Cam and what we went through. I guess starting almost 5 years ago now,
yeah.
About 5 years ago when Cameron was 3 turning 4 in that area,
mm-hmm.
We started noticing a lot of behavior changes. I'm going to let Jody tell this entire story because she has the timeline really well. So,
okay. So when she was about 3, I got pregnant with Andrew, and that's when all hell broke loose. And the first thing I noticed was that she was licking everything. She was really licking her hands a lot. And then it started to go up her arm. And then we had instances where she was licking store shelves and shopping carts and just whatever she could lick. And I asked a good friend of mine, you know, what do you think of this? And she said it seemed like it was a sensory issue. So we took her to the doctors and had her evaluated for sensory disorder, and they said, yes, she has sensory disorder. So that sort of kickstarted this crazy timeline of events that we went through with her, because we just didn't know what was going on. She also became really violent, and I was pregnant. She was trying to hit me in the stomach. So it was really scary. But we ended up taking her to this neurological center because they wanted to test her for ADHD. And when the testing came back, it said that she was having unprovoked seizures. So meaning that the testing that they did to try to provoke the seizures was not causing the seizures. And they said she was having them every 5 minutes and she needed to be medicated right away. So we followed doctor's orders and medicated her with this drug called Keppra. And it made her more violent.
Yeah. So that week when she started that medication, that Keppra, was one of the worst weeks probably we had as parents. She had at the time was already very violent, where she would go into these uncontrolled blackout rages basically for like 45 minutes to an hour straight, where you can see she was just gone. She wasn't Cameron anymore. She was a different little kid, and she was just attacking relentlessly and could not be controlled in any way. You could see that it wasn't just like a misbehaving type event. It was she's just completely lost her mind type thing. And then that week when she went on the Keppra was 5 to 10 times worse than those episodes. So it was just that whole time period in our life was very, very difficult dealing with her situations, and just not, you know, difficult for us to deal with, but also frustrating and upsetting because you have a kid who can't control what's going on and seems just completely mentally out of it, and you feel so helpless. Again, you continue with the Keppra story.
The issue with Keppra was that we could not get in touch with her doctor. The one doctor on call told me to try supplementing with B12 and see how that worked out, which obviously is not a great solution because she was trying to attack her sister Ava. So her doctor finally got in touch with me and said stop the Keppra immediately, and they put her on a new drug called Trileptal, and that calmed her down, but it did nothing for the spikes on her EEG, which is the testing they did to find the seizures. And that's all they really wanted to do was calm her spikes down. So they were saying that she was having these absence-style seizures, which is where you kind of space out, but you can't be brought back into reality with a snap of a finger. You just have to come out of it on your own. But we had never really noticed these staring off spells or anything. So they kept her on Trileptal for a short period of time, and then they tried a third drug, which they decided on based on genetic testing that we had done, which didn't really prove anything, but they felt like maybe there was a slight chance that this new drug would work, and that was Zonegran. And that one controlled her spikes, but it did nothing for her behavior. So I guess, like, I had always played around with a gluten-free diet, just based on what I know about autism and things, and how gluten can affect mood in kids who are on the spectrum. So I just wanted to play around with it for behavior purposes and see what would happen. We never followed it like super strictly. We were not worried about cross-contamination or anything like that. We just gave her gluten-free foods and, you know, kept it as gluten-free as possible for a while. Mm. And then anytime she would eat something, she would like go off the wall. Mm. Her behavior would change pretty quickly.
It was also at this time that we started noticing severe OCD qualities. She was deathly afraid of bees to the point where she wouldn't go outside.
And Cam loves to be outside.
Yeah, and Cam loves to be outside. She, all kinds of other significant anxiety things came
she
up and worry.
Her hair like
yeah.
crazy. She couldn't stop brushing her hair the whole ride to school. Well, that was the other, like, going to school was a task. She was 45 minutes to an hour late every single day.
There were many days where we couldn't get her out of the house, and were days where even things that she really loved doing, we couldn't get her to leave the house, and we would take her kicking and screaming and fighting into the car, and it was just exhausting. For everyone involved.
She would change her outfit before she had to leave for school every single day.
Yeah.
Try to escape the car when she got inside of it.
So this all came to a head when the neurologist that we were going to, Jody, had kind of a confrontation with him, essentially, because that basically led us to make the next step, which has ultimately led to the big changes.
Right. So I wanted the doctor to do a long-term study. The test they do in the office is only 45 minutes long, and she did not like the office. She did not like the doctor, so just stepping foot inside the facility gave her anxiety. But the doctor refused to do a long-term study. He said his 45-minute long study was good enough. I just wanted her to do a long-term study so that she could be in her own home environment and, you know, have plenty of time to calm down and feel okay, even though she probably would have still hated it. But it would have just been, you know, a little more calming for her to be in her own home and not have to worry about the doctor looking at her or anything or doing all these tests.
And the doctor was extremely condescending, which seems to be a common theme, because a lot of doctors are incredibly smart, but they have no bedside manner. They don't know how to talk to people.
Yeah, no social skills.
Yeah, no social skills and how to explain what it is that they understand. And so that was kind of a tipping point where we were just like, okay, we're not going to deal with this place anymore. We're going to look for other options.
Well, he actually also in that meeting, he reminded me that he was the expert.
Right.
And he stuck his finger in my face to get me to stop talking. Because he did tell me that Cam had 45 minutes to calm down, which told me right away that he had no idea how anxiety works. Because if you're worked up about something, you have anxiety, you can't just calm down
right.
because you're sitting still. It doesn't work like that.
Right. So the next step we took then was to seek other options. We had already been seeking other options. We had gone to other neurologists. We had gone to a bunch of different doctors.
Yeah, two other neurologists said that they would not have medicated her because they medicate based on clinical presentation, and they didn't see enough evidence that she was having actual visible absence seizures. So they thought that she should not be medicated, but the one doctor didn't want to take her off of her medication because the doctor had already medicated her. She felt like he was a good doctor, so she didn't want to mess around with it. But the second neurologist agreed to do a 72-hour long study and see what it found. And if it didn't, you know, she wasn't impressed with the testing, then she was going to start backing her off of her medication.
So at this point now, we're 3 years or so into this whole experience. And there were many other things that we did that we didn't even mention here. We had behavioral people come into the house to observe her in the house. We tried everything. Basically, we exhausted all these options, and now we're still stuck 3 years later in the same place that we were before, if not a worse place.
And we also, in that time period, found out that she couldn't hear out of her left ear, which was another neurological diagnosis. And that's all these neurological diagnoses is what led me to go back to the doctor and say, what is going on here? This doesn't make sense. She was a healthy baby. I had a healthy pregnancy. What happened that caused all this neurological damage at 3 years of age?
So that's kind of the whole buildup, and now we're going to get into what the ultimate solution ended up being, or at least what we've been able to do over the last now, what are we on now, a year and a half, almost 2 years now, right?
Yeah, November.
Yeah, so go ahead, do you want to get into that?
Sure. So our neighborhood is being built up, and we had a new neighbor move in who happened to be a nurse at an integrative facility. So the doctor that she works for is a medical doctor. He's affiliated with a great hospital around us, but he just treats from a holistic perspective as opposed to just, you know, here's some pills, see you later. So, you know, Trevor and I talked about it. We just thought, what do we have to lose? We've tried everything. She's still struggling in life. It's miserable for her. It's miserable for everybody in our family. Ava was breaking down daily. You know, I mean, we all were breaking down daily. It was not a good way to live. So we made the appointment and got her in. And this doctor does autonomic response testing. So it's muscle testing. It's non-invasive. He did all kinds of tests on her that day. We were there for probably, I don't know, 2-3 hours. He tested everything under the sun that he could think of to see what was going on with her. And in the end, he just said, she has a severe intolerance to gluten. You have to wipe it out. You have to change her personal care products. So I have to check every single thing that's going to touch her skin. She can't touch Play-Doh. She can't eat anything that has gluten. She can't eat anything that's possibly cross-contaminated with gluten. She has to have shampoo that's gluten-free, conditioner, lotion, toothpaste, everything has to be checked. You know, you have to be careful with things like lipstick, because she's a girl and she likes to play with makeup, and lipsticks can contain gluten. You know, she just has to be completely kept away from it as if it's a life-threatening allergy, because if she gets her hands on gluten, it's like an instantaneous violent reaction that comes out of her. Around Halloween last year, her behavior changed quite a bit, and I swore that she ate something, but I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I was cleaning her room and I found a Kit Kat wrapper. So it was a quick change.
So that was about almost 2 years ago that we started that, and our entire family switched to gluten-free. We have no gluten in the house. None of us eat gluten at all when we go out, because it's difficult to, you know, say to one kid that they can have this pizza and this other kid can't, and you have to worry about cross-contamination, all those things. So we made this huge change, and fortunately for us, Jody already had a lot of information on how to eat gluten-free based on her background in nutrition. So it was a lot easier for us to transition into eating gluten-free and keeping gluten out of the house. Whereas with a lot of other people, if you tell them what, you know, I can't eat gluten, they don't even know what gluten is. So we'll definitely talk about that a lot in this podcast for sure. Mm-hmm. But the change wasn't instant, but it did happen gradually.
Well,
and
the OCD went away in about 2 weeks after taking her off gluten completely.
Yeah, and it was just like that with the OCD was very quick.
It was really fast, you know, and it just subsided really quick. And her teacher even, we met with her for a conference and she told us, you know, Cam is going outside again. She's playing, because she would originally just sit next to the teacher at recess and she wouldn't move from the teacher's side. But the teacher, you know, let us know that she was going outside and she was playing again and, you know, doing all of her flips and tricks on the playground. And you could just see in her eyes that she was starting to recover.
Yeah.
You know, she started to see light in her eyes again instead of the pure darkness that was there.
And there was no more, I can't remember specifically, but when like the last blackout episode was. But from that point on, there were no more of those just complete she's gone moments where we were fearful for what she was going to do. That they just went away completely. It's one of those things where for us, we saw it firsthand. So we knew what it was like in those 3 years of just darkness, and then to see the difference in our quality of life and in her quality of life just speaks to the process. You know, like we went through this whole process, and to be able to come out of it like that was huge. And then, you know, we see it, but then our friends who see Cam every few months or so, the first time they were around her after she had been off the gluten for an extended period of time, maybe 8 months, I think, at that point, they could immediately see it in there. And you can see it in pictures. You can see it everywhere. It's really evident that there was a big change in her life because of this. Now, she's still Cam.
Mm-hmm.
She still has attention issues, focus issues. Yeah. She's still herself, but she's actually herself now. She's not this kid that completely changes and goes off the rails. So that's kind of Cam's story. We've kept up with, you know, we're very cognizant of everything that she eats. It is quite a chore because, especially when you're traveling with our lifestyle, you have to understand where it is that you can go reliably for food if you're going to be eating out, and you have to make a lot of food at home. You know, when we're at home during the school year, we cook a very high percentage of the meals. And it's obviously healthier for us as it is anyway. Convenience-wise, maybe not as easy, but it's really not as difficult as you would think it would be to make every single meal. And obviously it's helped us health-wise as well. So that's Cam's story. So the second story, mental health story for us, is my story. So on December 30th, 2013, around that time, that's when Jody was pregnant also. This is kind of eerie how it kind of coincided with Cam's things. It was actually before Cam really started showing any signs of being out there. We had a very normal life at this point. Jody and I have always had a very good relationship. We had two kids at the time, a third one on the way. I love my job. I was always somebody that you consider, I think, a happy person, very laid back, very calm generally. But around this time, I started feeling a lot of different feelings in my body, which would then go in my brain and tell me that there was something wrong. And I started worrying a lot about dying and things like that. And it all came to a head so it was December 30th, but the night before I had woken up in the middle of the night and couldn't fall back asleep and was just dealing with that same feeling that I had in my body. And I actually went and laid in bed with Cam, and it was like a comforting type thing where she was just there like hugging me or whatever at 3 o'clock in the morning. The next night, Jody and I drove down to Atlantic City to have some dinner with friends to go to the Borgata. And on the way down, I remember feeling very anxious, feeling like my hands were clamming up and just feeling something wasn't right. We went, sat down at dinner, and I got up from dinner and felt like I had to go to the bathroom and kind of sort through what was going on in my head. I looked in the mirror and the feelings were getting more intense, and I started to panic very badly. I started to be concerned that I was having a heart attack or that I was dying in some way. And so I sat in the bathroom for a few minutes. I came out and I told Jody that I wasn't okay and I needed to go outside, to come outside with me. And so at this point, everything was kind of going very fast, and I couldn't make sense of what was happening. My thoughts were just moving at a million miles a minute. We were outside of the Borgata, and I told her I needed to go to the hospital because I thought I was dying or I was having a heart attack. So she got me some water, and we got in the car to go over there. The entire time, I think I was breathing very heavily.
Talking about jumping out of the car.
Yeah, talk about jumping out of the car because I felt so, I just wanted to crawl out of my skin. We got to the hospital. They ran some tests. They tried to calm me down. You know, I was just very convinced that I was going to die and never see my family again. And
it was clear that you were having a panic attack.
Right. I was having a panic attack.
I was asking you at the Borgata to start doing box breathing and just try to calm yourself down, you know, with breathing techniques.
Right. And I couldn't do it.
No.
Nothing was working. I was chugging water.
Overwhelmed. It was
completely
much.
Overwhelmed. After about an hour, they gave me Ativan after, you know, a certain period of time. And then, you know, about 45 minutes later, I calmed down to the point where I could actually organize my thoughts and talk. And it felt like I got hit by a car.
You were high.
Yeah, I was basically high.
You were talking about how the sandwich felt in your hand
right.
when you were eating.
And that, you know, calmed me down. But, you know, I was still just like, what just happened? We went home, went to bed. And the next day I woke up and felt like I was in a car accident. I just felt completely like I'd been hit by a ton of bricks. They explained to me that this was a panic attack. I'd never had like an official panic attack like this before, like an extreme anxiety attack. In the past, I had had moments of time, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of just a little panic in my head, but nothing that went to this extreme. So the first thing I thought when I woke up that day was like, why did that just happen? And what was I going to do to not have that happen again? And the next 6 months or so were 6 to 8 months were very tough. I went to the doctor and they prescribed Paxil for me, which is something I'd taken in the past, and it made me feel awful. I took it for maybe a week or two, and it was just the worst 2 weeks ever.
You're gaining weight.
I was depressed. I didn't want to get out of bed. It was awful. So, you know, I went kind of on this journey to figure out what is it that I need to do not to have this happen. We had multiple times in that 6 to 8 months where we would go out somewhere and I'd start to feel the panic set in, and then we'd have to leave. I remember writing in my notes app on my phone, actually, I think it was on my birthday that year. So this is now 7 months later. I remember writing something because I was panicking in the mall. There were just many times where I just couldn't get under control. They gave me Ativan, which I used to calm myself down when I would feel like I would get to that point so that I did not have another major attack where I felt like I had to go to the hospital. But ultimately, I ended up finding meditation. And I found meditation because Jody saw, was it a TED Talk or the book?
Maybe I saw a TED Talk, which led me to the book.
Yeah, it was
a
TED Talk done by...
how I found the book, but...
It was a TED Talk done by Andy Puddicombe, who is one of the founders of Headspace, which is the Headspace app. And then she said, you should read this book that you wrote. So I read the book. And I always wanted to get in meditation, but it was one of those things, I think a lot of people feel this way, but they don't understand how to get into it or what it is.
You
don't
have that picture of like transcendental meditation where
right.
you're sitting in a room quiet,
yeah,
doing stuff like that.
And so the Headspace app is what I found, and it was just 10 minutes a day, and I started doing it. And, you know, I was also making sure that I was eating really well, but mostly the meditation was the biggest thing for me. I also went to cognitive behavioral therapy, which helped as well, but the meditation is what did it for me. After I meditated for a while, they say it takes about 8 weeks or so to notice the changes, but I immediately started realizing that when I would have these moments of panic, it was always either because of a feeling in my body or a thought in my head. And I would try to run from those things and not address them. And so when the feeling would happen in my body, I would just run from it. Well, meditation taught me that these were just feelings and thoughts and that's it. And to address them and then move on. And that's what meditation is about. You know, you're able to say, okay, this is a feeling in my chest, or this is a thought in my head, address the thought and then move back to what you're doing. And that was a game changer for me. And I think from that time, you know, the anxiety is still always there. It's always going to be there. People think that if you have anxiety, that it's just going to disappear once you find the solution. That's not how it works. It's a never ending journey. It's always present, but once you're able to understand what the thoughts are and what the feelings are and why they're there, and then address them and move on, then you have what it is that you need to handle the anxiety. So that's kind of my story now. I've basically spent the last 5.5 years now working towards figuring out what other things I could do for my mental health to make me the best poker player, to make me the best father, best husband. And I think we'll get into a lot of those things on this podcast. and a lot of the different ideas that we've come up with and solutions that we've come up with to address mental health for us. You know, this podcast is going to be about our experiences and what we've learned through Cameron and through my trials with anxiety. And, you know, we can only share that type of stuff, and we can share other things that we find through research and things like that. But I think the overarching theme of this podcast, mental health wise, is that we want to help. You know, we want to be there for people who might not know what the solution can be for them. And so you can always reach out to us. We'll give you an email here at the end of the podcast, I guess, to reach out to us. And you know, this first episode, I guess, is us telling us our stories here. But in future episodes, we're going to get into a lot of different things. Like we said at the beginning of the podcast, we talk about what it's like to raise kids in this lifestyle, talk about parenting, how frustrating parenting can be. How funny parenting can be. And, you know, I think we spend a lot of time with our kids. We both have flexible schedules. We travel all over the country together. We've led this kind of remarkable, ridiculous lifestyle now for Ava. Our oldest Ava is going to be turning 11 soon. And we've been traveling since before she was born. So our kids have seen a lot. They've done a lot. And we have a lot of experiences and a lot of fun things to share. So I think you'll find this podcast to be hopefully informative, hopefully inspirational, hopefully funny. And I don't know. I think that's it. Is that about it for the first one here?
Yeah, but we can end with a little story.
Okay.
A little story that happened last night.
Okay.
So last night, Trevor was out with his friends, and I went to pick Cameron up from cheer practice. And she was out running with the rest of the team, because they make them run every single practice, whatever, they make them run a mile. She came in, and I heard her friend calling her name. She was looking for her. And then when she found her, she put $10 in Cameron's hand. And Cam came over and said, she bet me that I couldn't beat her. And I beat her, so she paid me $10. And I was like, oh my God. I was mortified because the other mom was standing right there. And the mom was laughing, but I thought, oh my God, this is $10 that this kid just gave to my kid because she beat her in a race.
Right. This is a proud dad moment for me. And here's my take on this thing here. So I posted this on Twitter. If you're going to talk as much smack as Cam talks, if you watch our videos, Cam's a big smack talker. She's
like that in life.
She's like that in life, yeah. If you're going to talk that much smack, you got to be willing to back it up, put your money where your mouth is. She did it. She won the bet. The other girl, props to the other girl who paid up on the bet.
Instantly
paid up on the bet. And that's it. But I got to tell you what Jody did. I wanted your feedback on what Jody did here. She decreased the bet size to $1. She gave the girl back the $10 and then decreased the bet size to $1. Now, coming from a poker background, that's a really bad thing to do. It's a bad precedent to set because Cam may have just got free rolled for $9. Because, you know, Cam's going to pay up. Cam will always pay up on a bet. She'd pay up her $10 and the girl might have just taken it. So she might have just got free rolled on this $9.
But the mother and I were standing together saying how these kids have no idea what money is. They don't know how much money $10 is for what they have and they just don't get it. So I said, you know, that's fine if you guys want to make a bet, but we're going to make it $1. You got to give the money back. And the Cam's friend was like relentlessly trying to give her more than $1.
So I will make sure that Cam continues to give her action because she's clearly, she understands how the gambling world works. I want to hear the feedback from the people that listen to this podcast. What do you guys think? Should it have been a $1 bet or a $10 bet? Keep the $10, give the $1 back.
And remember that they're eight. They're eight years old.
Which is clearly, I mean, they clearly know what they're doing. So you guys can reach out to us with your feedback, comments, suggestions, anything you'd like. Or if you just want to talk about mental health, you can share your story with us. The email address is...
Or if you need to talk about anything and you don't want to share a story, you just want to talk because you're struggling, send us a message.
It can be anonymous. That's fine.
Yep. We're very good at listening.
Email is raisingthenuts@gmail.com. All right. I think that's it for our first one. How did we do, you think?
I don't know. I guess we'll find
out. We'll see the feedback. I'm sure this is going to get better from here if it sounds terrible.
Let's hope so.
If you guys heard any kind of mowing in the background, we're sorry. We had the mowers here. And we have a very small time window to record. So.
Yeah. Every time we try to record, something happens.
Yeah.
Something
but we're getting it out. You have to just get it out to the world.
Yeah.
It's out there now. If people like us, they'll listen. If they don't, they won't listen. What are you going to do?
That's it.
All right.
That's all you can do.
So you can find Jody on Twitter at Jody L. Savage. And on,
Jody with a Y.
Jody with a Y. Don't spell her name wrong, people.
I mean, you won't find me if you spell
that's
it wrong.
That's true. Instagram.
JLSav_eats.
And you can find us on YouTube at Raising the Nuts, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram as at Trey Momey, M-O-M-E-Y. All right, that's it. First ever Raising the Nuts podcast in the books.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Yep. See you guys later.
Bye.
Don't know how I'll be if I'm not free to take a leap. Oh, I am a believer.